Okay.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, everybody listening to the Independent Corner. I'm your host, Jonathan Moody, and I have a very special co-host tonight, Day Green. How you doing, Day?
Hey. I am great. How are you, sweetie? Mr. Have a Cold over there.
Thanks. We have a very, very special guest tonight, Leslie Easterbrook. How you doing, Leslie?
I'm doing fine. You know, we're here to help you through this cold.
I'm not going to live this down.
I have a little respiratory thing from the smoke in the air in L.A., which is where I am tonight.
Oh, nice.
Oh.
Yeah. It's not good. I'm driving home and there's another fire is like, you know, sort of raging. And
oh.
It's just not good. So many people are out of their homes or have lost their homes. And, you know, I'm lucky I'm sitting in an area which is not really affected, but we get the smoke.
Yeah,
and
so you
then,
get,
and we
you
get
the worst part. Of, well, not the worst, but the second worst part of it.
Yeah.
Well,
I mean, thank God that your house is not being affected. I said, thank God your house is not being affected by it all.
You know,
so
I say
people.
That about every 10 seconds. You know,
yeah.
I just try to be grateful for that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we spent only 5 years remodeling it, and we're still not done. So if something happened now, it would just... it would be like some kind of fate, you know. It was haunted ground. Oh, man.
Well, I guess to kick this all off, what got you into acting?
Yeah. Well, you know, it was very interesting because I was, I'm sorry, maybe I'm too interesting to the people listening, but I was just thinking about that today because I'm ready to start some classes, and I just got a film offer that will keep me from starting for probably an extra month, but I figured at my age I should probably learn to act. and I was there's a thing that you do where you develop your own story, and you do it in the class, and I think this is such an interesting concept because whether you want to be an actor or are an actor or whatever your relationship is to the entertainment sort of, there's always a question, what was the compelling thing? So I was thinking that's part of my story. And I was adopted when I was 9 months old. And I grew up on a small farm in Nebraska. And lots of, you know, sort of myths of scary things. And there was a lot of kind of loneliness. But I entertained myself. And I had, you know, friends at school. But the town was really only about 300 people. And I think that I played a lot of parts as a little kid because I basically remember going out to a barn and practicing talking when I first learned to talk. And I got in the habit of sort of being somebody else because I didn't have a backstory. I always knew I was adopted. I didn't have a backstory that was my own, so I would create all these characters that I would play with. And I think that it was such a marvelous escape from reality that as I grew up, I was fascinated with everything acting. You know, everything, maybe it was a small stage in the little town we lived in, or we drove a long way, 200 miles, to see, like, my first production. And it was just transporting, and we had a little movie theater that was only open on the weekends. It was really like Last Picture Show, if you remember that movie. It was almost sort of like I grew up in black and white, but when I was watching a black and white movie in that theater, it was in color. Those characters were so exciting and transporting that I think I didn't have any excuse, I mean, or any alternative. I just always wanted to be playing these characters or developing characters. And I thought my backstory is sort of like creating a backstory for a character because I didn't really have one.
Wow.
Bizarre. I don't think I've ever really told that story, but I was just thinking about how I would develop that for a class. And it occurred to me that my backstory is really what I'm doing now and continue to do.
That's really cool. It's like metaphorical.
Yeah. And I know I would give speeches and things when I finally got to high school and do the plays. And I was always sort of transported while I was doing it. And, you know, the response was usually, you know, very sort of extremely positive. And the fact that I get terribly nervous to the point of throwing up, you know, before I go on a stage or go up to make a speech or something, I all my insecurities, you know, this is going to be terrible. I won't remember what I'm doing. I'm going to fall off the stage. All these things happen like they do to anybody else. But the minute that I would walk on the stage in the lights or get in front of the microphone, felt like I was at home. And I think I've just been searching for home.
Wow, that's really cool.
Yeah, but I'm sort of sad for me, the person, isn't it? But I mean, I have a lovely life, so I'm not trying to put that down. But it really is. I think that, and I always tell young actors when they're saying, you know, should I do this or whatever, and I say, only do it if you simply can't live without it, because it's a hard life.
Absolutely,
that's awesome. So, I guess did you go to classes or did you do anything like that? Like, did you take theater in high school or?
Well, they didn't even have theater in high school. I remember I took speech, but they didn't have we did plays, you know, occasionally there'd be a class play or whatever. But I took a speech class because I'd won a speech competition in the high school. And this was bigger high school. This was in Colorado, and my dad was getting his doctorate and blah, blah, blah. And I remember going out to do my first speech on a state level in Colorado. And I picked a speech. This was, way back when. I picked a speech on civil rights because it really spoke to the consciousness, I guess, inside of me and what I would hope that we would all share. And because it was on civil rights, at that particular moment, I got booed off the stage.
Oh.
And I remember thinking, good grief, I want to find out more about this. So I went to college. I became an opera singer because I loved the grand opera and the great tragic characters. And I always sang, and my dad was a music teacher, so it was kind of a natural thing to do. I did lots of plays, but I was cast and I really didn't study. So I didn't study until after I got out of college, and I had a scholarship to Juilliard, and I didn't take it because I came to California to do a concert and got involved with a theater group, and it was so enlightening, and it was so, I still did some opera for a few years, but being in the theater was much more of a family, and there's a lot of, even though you have the constraints of the play and playwright and the directing and all, you know, the direction and the other characters, it's a little less restrictive than opera. You know, opera is so much about the music, and I was so, found out that I was just absolutely in love with the drama. I love the characters. And the music is beautiful. I still love to listen to it. So I did study in the few years after I was in college, and I was already working. So I really didn't study acting per se until I already had an equity card, and I was busy working in the theater. And then I did like intensives whenever I could, and that's why I laugh and I think, oh, I got to go back to class. It's only been like 106 years. I should probably figure out what this is. But I've read many books, and I've had tons of teachers for short periods. Throughout my career, because it is something you want to do. The hardest thing in the world is to stand up and do something in front of your peers. And a class is always scary because you have to stand up in front of all these very judgmental actors. And we really do judge each other because we're trying to learn. So it's something I enjoy. I enjoy the process of learning because it's just another element of creating.
Well, with you wanting to go back to school and all this, and I know this is more of a question instead of, you know, divulging into your background, but...
Yeah, please. Let's get a good date here.
Did you just decide, like, was this a period of time that you decided to go back to school? Because you've had quite a bit of experience.
I've been in my mind for a while, and I've been so busy that I haven't had a chance to, because you want to have a little time mapped out so that you don't just go to a class and then all of a sudden you have to quit. So I've been thinking about it for some time, and I did a play in Kentucky in... June. We rehearsed in May, and I think we maybe opened the last part of May, and we ran about 3 weeks at the Pioneer Playhouse because a friend of mine who had directed me in a movie called House that came out on DVD last year, I think, and we did it in Poland. I love this director, and his family built the theater, and he was kind of running it with his two sisters, and they are both incredibly talented, I find. And it basically is a non-equity, a non-union house, and it's a stock house where they bring a lot of young actors down, or not so much many young actors, as actors of all ages, and they do a whole season. And he asked me to come and do this play because an actress named Kim Darby was going to do it, and she had some surgery, and she had to pull out. And it was fascinating. I can't remember what the original question was. Oh, so the play ended, and I came back to L.A., and I've done some meetings, and nothing's panned out, and I thought, well... It's been a couple of months. You know, I think maybe I'm going through a transition and I'll have some time and I should take advantage of this. So I went to a studio here and I took their informational class and I signed up for four classes actually, four different kinds of classes. And I said, I'm going to do an intensive. And, of course, because I'm going off to do some conventions. I'm doing a convention on the 11th, 12th, and 13th in Kentucky in Lexington, and then I'm going to Pittsburgh to do another horror convention, which I just love, because the most exciting thing about being an actor, I find, is the family you create to the fans.
Yes.
And, you know, being an adopted child in a little town in Nebraska on a farm, I love people, and there are no better people than you meet at horror conventions. It's just a whole wonderful thing. So I'm going to do three shows, and I saw this other looming couple of months, 3 months, and I said, you know, I usually work a lot in the summer. No one's hiring me this summer. I'll bet you I'll be free in the fall, and I signed up. That's how it happened. And now, the very week that I'm supposed to start, I have a film offer.
Right.
So it's, you know, and it's always nice to get the film offer, you know, because I would rather work, but I know that at this particular studio that I can put the classes off for a month and then start. Because I don't want to have a long period with no work. I'd rather work. But it's also exciting to have no work and suddenly have to create your own life, you know, and your own activities. And I can't think of any more exciting way to do it than creating in a class. And
right.
having somebody, you know, scream and yell at you when you're not doing the work.
There you go.
You know, because when you're working sometimes, everybody on a film set is, like, working so hard. The crew's working. The director's got 1,000 things on his mind. You know, you sometimes don't do your best work because you're just trying to, you know, finish the scene before you lose the light. Or you're trying to finish a scene because it's a scene from a day when it rained, you know, and you've got to get it into another day's schedule. And you hope that the work is good, but you don't have that chance to really work on it. The work that you do is usually internal and alone. You know, the real work, the core work of it. So the whole process is fascinating to me.
That's good. Yeah, and especially with teachers, you know, I'm sure a lot of teachers would, you know, would yell and scream, you know. I remember I had a theater teacher in, like, high school that was just awful. Like, he was mean as hell, but, like, it made you do your best work, so.
It's bizarre, isn't it, how we respond to that? I mean,
yeah.
You think, and I think in some cases it causes you to recoil and maybe get frightened, and fear is not your best state to be in when you're trying to work. Even if the character is afraid, you don't want to be afraid.
Right.
But on the other hand, you don't want to be a quitter, and that kind of, it's like you overcome the fear or the anger that you feel back, and in high school you can't yell back at the teacher.
Well, you can.
So
you've
got all that
inside,
and you can put it into your work.
Yeah,
definitely. So I guess I just want to, you know, quickly get into the Police Academy series. That's one of your biggest things that you've you had in your career.
Yeah.
No, I will tell you straight up, I used to own every Police Academy on Betamax.
Betamax?
On Betamax, yes.
Good for you.
So, yeah, it's a huge
fan. I hope
fan.
You saved those. They could be, like, you know, of historic significance.
Well, they broke. Like, the Betamax thing broke itself, I don't know.
Oh,
after
my
a while,
God.
It, you know, it just kind of died away, I guess. But,
you know, Leslie, I have to tell you, when I was watching the films back in the day, you single-handedly had me sticking my chest out as far as I could, trying to have your boobs.
Oh, honey, well, it's so good for your posture, didn't you find?
It was.
Yeah.
Well, I would sit there and look, and I just always admired you so much. And then
oh,
I'd look down,
God.
Like, where are mine? You know, I still do that.
I bet it's so funny. Well, it was, you know, kind of embarrassing to me at the time, but, you know, I certainly got past it. But I remember, well, I mean, there's so many stupid Police Academy stories. But in the first one, I realized it really was about the chest, you know, so I had to, like, really stand straight and, like, stick them out. And I would go home from the set aching because my own posture is sort of, like, coiled around, you know, and sunken down. And I had to laugh. I thought, well, this is really good for my posture. But when we were doing number 7 in Moscow, I remember when it wasn't even the director, it was our crazy, wonderful producer, Paul Maslansky, came to me and he said, did you read this scene? And I said, yeah. I said, what it says in the script is that I'm walking around a corner and you see my boobs first. And that's how you know it's Callahan. I went, how do we do that? And he said, well, I think we have it all set up. And I thought, this is truly going to be one of my most either grotesque or favorite memories, is walking just at the right pace so that the camera would pick up my breaths before it picked up the rest of me as I rounded the corner. And sure enough, it worked.
Wow.
I don't even can remember if it's in the movie, but I know I went and I looked in the, they had a, you know, the video monitors that just by the camera, and I said, I have to see this. And I thought, truly, I have stooped to great depths.
But you don't really watch the movies after they're done, like.
Yeah, I would watch them, but you know, we never had premieres. We had a screening after the first one, and it was one of the most fun evenings of my life. But I would watch the movies, you know, the opening night. And then a couple of times I took a bunch of people and bought their tickets and we'd eat popcorn with, you know, the regular, you know, audience. And I would just hate them when I'd see them. I would just hate them.
Oh.
I thought, oh, I'm too mean. Oh, no, look how that, oh, I didn't like that scene. I'm so critical.
I
and
was
the funniest
in love
thing
with
when
your
it came
character.
Out on video, you know, I couldn't help but buy them because people would like, you know, autograph copies, and I would give them to the copies, and I would buy them, and then I'd end up looking at them, and then I liked them. But my initial thing, you know, we great big screen, and you're sitting there with people that you really like, that you know really well, and I would think, oh, but I would end up liking the movie, but I would never like me in it.
You were like, I was in love with your character. You, well, that, and I had this really strange crush on Hightower. Don't ask. I don't know.
Oh, gosh, I cannot wait to tell him. That is so truly bizarre. I can't wait to tell him.
I don't know.
He will love to hear that. And you know, we're all such great friends. And, you know, it's like a group of people who are just madly in love with each other. I mean,
now, you guys still, like, everybody still keeps in touch?
Well, everybody that's alive, you know, I mean, we miss David Graff so much. We miss
Tucker. Oh, come on.
Oh, that was just a terrible, terrible shame. But the rest of us really try to. And G.W. Bailey, who played Captain Harris, just had a birthday party. He's on The Closer now, which is a terrific job. And that's actually a great story because he's the guy that taught him, that he taught acting in Texas many years ago, insisted that GW be on that show. And most of us, you know, have trouble getting sort of into the mainstream after doing Police Academy. And so here's GW Bailey with this wonderful role on The Closer, which is such a hot and cool show. And so he had this birthday party, and I saw people that I have, some of the group that I haven't seen in a long, long time, and we just screamed and carried on till 4 a.m, and that was 2 weeks ago. But Marion Ramsey, who plays Hooks, we've lived together. You know, we've had apartments together, then her fiancé passed away a number of years ago, and she moved into my house for 3 years. And then my husband and I have this, you know, wonderful, wonderful spate of remodeling. So now we're not living together, but we talk every day on the telephone. Scott Thompson, who played Copeland, I had an apartment when I married my now husband. I've had a string of them, you know. And so when I moved in with Dan, my husband, Scott was in between apartments, and so he's been basically subletting my old apartment for a long time, so we're on the phone every day. And Bubba I talk to a lot, and every time you talk to Bubba, we get back to Police Academy stories. And it's just we're just a tight group.
Wow.
A tight group. I mean, some have fallen away and, you know, gone and done their own thing, and some have left the business. But it was so bonding.
Now, I've been wanting to know this for a little bit, but how come you weren't in the second one?
They didn't ask me.
For real? Like this? Oh, wow.
They didn't want me. I think there was one call that was made, and they went out on the street, and I was associated with the academy. You know, GW wasn't in it either, I mean, because we were instructors at the academy. And so they went on out on the street. And I'm trying to turn this phone off. I am so sorry. This is terrible. We're on the radio, and my cell phone starts ringing. I thought it was off. But my cell phone does these things. Yeah. That's what were we talking about?
How you said GW wasn't in the second either. And
oh, yeah, because for the same reason. And then we just were so excited when they brought us back in three. But I mean, very excited. I remember when I got that call, I was just jumping up and down and screaming, and you know, nobody could tell me or hear me. I was living at the top of a hill. But they made a call about the same time that I had an offer to do another film, which I ended up doing, and it's a terrible, terrible film. But I got to work for 6 weeks with Johnny Depp. He was 19 years old and the sweetest kid in the world who had such enormous potential. And we really had a great time. I mean, we really had fun together. I mean, he was such a great kid. And Hector Elizondo and Rob Morrow and some interesting people in that film. And there's a long, long story, which I won't go into, as to why the film didn't turn out the way we all thought it was going to turn out. But I'm really not sorry that I didn't do two, because I had that wonderful time with Johnny Depp, and look what's happened to his career.
There you go.
It was such,
you know, I had a long job with George Clooney before he became, you know, the big star George Clooney. And it's those things that, because you can just tell when someone's got that kind of potential, and they also have that kind of quality, that glossy quality, that something's going to happen.
Yeah.
And then when it does, you just sit back and go, yeah, isn't that nice?
Like, I knew him back when.
Yeah, I knew him back when. And it's also a thing about liking to be right. It's like somebody, it happened, and you felt that it was going to happen. And then, you know, his work is so wonderful. I mean, it's mature. He's a man, and I think of him as a little boy, you know, in my heart of hearts. But it was fun to come back on three, you know. And it's somebody made a point the other day that we've been, there's a script and it was going to happen, and we were going to do number eight, and a bunch of people were going to come back. Steve Guttenberg was going to come back. Everyone was going to come back and do this, and it fell apart because one of the factions, it was Village Roadshow and the Weinstein Company, and they, not Weinstein, Jerry Weintraub Company, and they, some of them wanted to not use the old group and just do a whole remake, and the others wanted to have the old group of us sort of training a new group. And they couldn't reach terms on it. And then our original, not the original, Pat Proft and Neil Israel, but Hugh Wilson wrote a script, I guess. And it's very, very good. And there's still some hope. But I was talking to Scott Thompson about it just recently, and he said, you know, Police Academy, the humor is different than the humor today. You know, we're not a knocked up. We're not a, it's a different style. I don't know if it would work today. And he may have a point.
I know, call me old-fashioned, but I much prefer the Police Academy movies to the now Seth Rogen films. That's just me. I mean, the whole knocked-up film and everything.
You just talked yourself into my heart. Thank you for that. I mean, because I felt kind of stupid that I hadn't thought of that. You know, I keep thinking that, oh, gosh, we've had such a great time and that it could still work. And then I thought, well, maybe I'm just really wrong, and I'm old-fashioned, because the Seth Rogen films, I actually like those, but they are very different from what we did.
I guess I have a hard time with the with some of the just, I mean, there's one thing to be outlandish and then one thing to be completely outlandish. You know what I mean? The,
yeah.
Like the whole scene in Knocked Up when they go to Vegas and they're tripping on the shrooms, that fell so flat to me. And I see, you know, the jackasses around me just rolling with laughter, and I'm like, this is not funny. Like, I don't find the humor in it.
It's interesting.
I don't know.
Well, yeah, it's interesting. You have to have a certain mentality, I think, to find it funny. And I do find a lot of it funny, but not all of it.
Yeah.
You know, and part of it's my age, too. You know, there's just something that happens to you at some point where you...
Well, I will disagree. As far as the Vegas scene, the line that gets me laughing, though, in that scene in Knocked Up is the, that's how you get pink eye. Line.
Oh yeah, well, that's
that was funny.
That was a great moment.
Yeah, but other than that, I mean, like, I can understand. Yeah, some of it's not as funny, and people are laughing at stupid stuff these days. You know.
Yeah. Well, come on, Police Academy is pretty stupid too.
Well, it was silly.
It was supposed to be that way, and it was hysterical. You know, and it just different things. Like when and to use you again, when somebody would walk up and like just face right to your breast, I mean, that every time still gets me to laugh. And
like, you
just
never
can't
think, whether that character would actually allow that to happen. You just don't stop to think about it, because you don't need that sense of reality.
Yeah.
I mean, now Callahan would probably be bare-breasted, you know, because that's funny. But it's a different world now. But I do think, I mean, I thought until Scott said that, I said, well, I think it would be like a, you know, sort of a testimony to the past and, you know, get that old 80s mentality going.
I think it really could work, and I think that it could be marketed in a really great way. You know, because I'm a 20-something, and I'm still...
Because you sound young, but when you talk about Police Academy, you sound older. I mean, you know, the content.
Oh, I'm like a, you know, an 80-year-old trapped in a 20-something body. But, you know, it just, I think that it could be marketed to such, because, like, you know, that movie was something that was, you know, I would watch it every time it came on TV, and I have 15 friends right now who would, you know, can sit there and watch it with me and line by line, you know, repeat it. So I think it can, you know, give me the email address.
Oh, that's so funny.
Give it to me. I'll write some letters.
Well, it's nice to hear, and I know one, not too long ago, I was talking to our producer, Paul Maslansky, and or maybe it was earlier, and then it came up again, but he said something about this thought was funny. He said, I just hate double entendre. And I thought, we had some of that in the first movie. And I thought, my favorite of the group, of course, is the first one.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that I happen to like double entendre. And it got
now,
very...
Now, which double entendres are you speaking of, like, from the first one?
Well, somebody saying something and kind of meaning something else. I mean, being a little bit smarter. And I can't think of anything specific. I know we threw in, you know, naked girls in a shower scene so we could get an R rating, but that has nothing to do with double entendre. But there was a little bit more, well, I mean, kind of double entendre, was the scene with Lessard when he is speaking to all the visiting dignitaries, and he's standing behind the podium, and
Georgina Felton is
in the podium. So here he is going, oh, and isn't this lovely, and we have this night, and basically he's having a hoo-ha. I mean, here he is speaking to all these people, and we know what's really happening to him. I suppose it's kind of a double. It's a little more sophisticated.
Yeah.
And it was absolutely hysterical, and I had done a musical with George Gaines a number of years before we did the first Police Academy, and I'm just mad for his talent, and he's such a great guy. And I remember when I read that scene, I knew George was going to be playing it. I literally fell off my chair. I mean, I was crawling on the floor. I was laughing so hard. I thought, there's nobody else in the world that could pull this off. And he did it. But it's kind of double entendre, where you've got two things going on at the same time. And so every word he says meant something different.
Yeah.
And then when we got into the others, they made them, you know, PG. And basically simpler. I mean, Paul got his way because it was a big success, the first one, and so our producer got his way, and some of the more sophisticated humor, if you will, it's still stupid, but, you know, sophisticated stupid, went by the wayside. And I think if we did another one, it would be sort of more fun to have it in the vein of the first one.
Yeah.
But that's all. That's all.
And I don't know, though, because with the, like, especially with movies these days, they're going PG or PG-13. Or not PG as much, but PG-13 mostly, because I guess to attract a audience, you know, of, like, kids.
They're focusing on the disposable income of teenagers because they find adults more likely to download off the Internet.
Yeah.
So they're targeting the kids who... Yeah, they're targeting the kids who work at McDonald's for date nights. With as bad as the torrent sites and everything have gotten nowadays, they figure kids are more likely to spend in the theaters than adults are. So
you'd think in terms of technology and downloading and all that the kids would be the ones who would be the most proficient at it.
Yeah, the date nights. You can't forget.
Yeah,
you know,
you're
the
right.
Movie
you can't get away from
dark.
That. Where else do you go? You hang out at a Starbucks?
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess that's true. I never thought. See, you know much more about the business than I do.
I guess the Police Academy movies could be a date movie too. So, you know,
I'd totally go on a date to it. I'm gonna go with Hightower.
I can't wait to tell him. I can't wait, and especially when I tell him you're a 20-something. You know, he's gonna say she has a crush on me. He's one of the sweetest men in the world, I got to tell you, and one of the biggest bruisers, you know. He was such a great football player, and turns out just to be a great team player as far as making a movie is concerned. I mean, he didn't go to Russia. You know, we went to Moscow for number 7. They wanted him to go, you know, desperately, and they didn't have a part for Marion Ramsey, who was Hooks. And he didn't go because they refused to write a part for Marion.
Oh.
He turned it down. I mean, you may say, oh, that's really weird and that's really stupid and he shouldn't have done that.
No,
I mean, there are a thousand reasons why, you know, he should have probably done it because of his loyalty to the franchise or whatever that, you know, whatever it is. But he turned down, and he was a big moneymaker, you know, in terms of making the police academies. There was a gradual pay scale with Marion and I always at the bottom. Because we were women, and we women have made some strides in the last 10, 15 years.
Absolutely.
In the business. But he didn't think that was right because he was a great protector of everyone. And he didn't know.
That's completely admirable.
Yeah, I mean, it really is. And what he did was he sent her, she was really in need at that particular moment, and he sent her some money.
You know what's funny is that didn't he do that in the police academy for the first police academy? Didn't he get thrown out of the police academy because of Hooks?
Yeah, because she ran over Scott Thompson's toes.
Yeah, there you go.
Copeland's toes, and he protected her. But that really it's bizarre because it's really his personality.
He seems like a sweet guy, you know.
Yeah, and he'll go to bat for all of us. I mean. He hasn't had to do it, you know, in any other situation quite that dramatic. As he went to back, he turned down a film because of it. But I also think there's another secret reason is that he did some PR for the Police Academy movies in Europe, and I went to Japan with him. It was the most hysterical trip of my life. But I never went on a European junket, but I did go to Japan twice. And in Europe, they couldn't find any beds long enough for him. And I think he got frightened that he wouldn't be able to sleep in Moscow.
That's funny.
Yeah, but he went to the Deauville Film Festival, actually. It was the first time it happened. And they, you know, in his contract to go to the Deauville Film Festival, he said, I've got to have, you know, the dimension of whatever the king-size beds are here. Because, you know, he's 6'9". And he also needs to be kind. And he's had a lot of football injuries, so he needs to be comfortable. And they didn't get the bed for him, and so they ended up having to put a bunch of beds together and get him. And they got him like a rec room, and they put all these beds together. Oh my gosh!
Well, I guess we've talked a lot about police academies. Is there any other really really great stories that you want to tell us before we probably go on to the next topic?
Oh no. I mean, that's probably about, I can't think of any right now. I mean, no great stories. No great stories. I mean, it was just always fun, and it was always crazy on the set. I mean, one of my stories I can tell it now. I'm old enough and, you know, enough water's under the bridge, but I didn't know. Hugh Wilson, who directed the first one, was the dream. I my favorite director ever. I mean, he's up there with Rob Zombie. I got to give Rob huge credit. He's just wonderful to work with. But Hugh would drink Coca-Cola all day long. I think it was Coca-Cola. And I didn't know till halfway through the movie that he was filling it with scotch. And he's just always a little tipsy. And then I heard the story the other night because my husband's a comedy writer from MASH and Growing Pains and Newhart and whatnot. And he ran a couple of shows. And it's that Hugh, the story on Hugh is that WKRP, he did the same thing. And that it was absolutely hysterical. And he used to write all the WKRPs and direct them, you know, and he was just always tipsy. So he would say to us, you know, we had the script and we all thought the script was so funny for that first Police Academy movie. We all loved it. And he'd say, what scenes are up today? And, you know, we'd say, well, this and this and this. He'd go, well, you guys go over there and you work it out and show me what you got and we'll see if we want to use your version or my version. So we'd come up to shoot the scenes and he'd say, well, show me what you got. So we do the scene. You go, I like that better than mine. Let's do yours. And then every time, he made us feel like we were so smart, like we were, it was like an improv group. And it never varied very far from what he wrote because what he wrote was absolutely so terrific. But it wasn't really until recently that I realized one of the reasons that he let us do what we wanted to do is that he was wasted.
That's awesome.
It's kind of a good story, isn't it? He doesn't drink anymore, but I just, you know, and he never was drunk. He was never abusive. He was never fell down. It's just that he was able to handle it, and he was just slightly funny.
Like, did you tell it all, though? Like,
no.
So you had no idea.
Tell. Even when I found out with Scotch, I'd go up to him toward the end of the day, and I'd say, can I have a sip of your Coke? And he'd say, yeah, okay. So I'd take a sip. He was always so, and he seemed sober. He was always cognizant, always smart, always with us. But it's just kind of an interesting take on it. He'd probably shoot me. If he, I don't think he's listening. But he lives in Virginia, like you, Jonathan. But he's just the best guy in the world. I'd give anything. I would pay. I would come up with the financing for Police Academy so I could work with Hugh again.
If I'm not mistaken, didn't he do Blast from the Past as well?
Yes, he did. Did you like it?
I loved it.
I did too. I'm so glad you saw that.
Yeah, no, that was the Brendan Fraser movie. That was just. Oh, I you know, him and Christopher Walken as dad? Oh my God, that was hilarious.
Yes.
Big casting right there. So.
Yes, it was absolutely terrific. Absolutely terrific. He had a big party right after he shot that, and it was his 20th anniversary, I think, and so he had this big party, and he invited a few of us from Police Academy to come to that party because it was his anniversary, and, you know, we hadn't seen the film yet, but that party was a blast. He just has a way. Wherever he is, everybody has a good time, and there are very few people that I've met in my lifetime that can do that repeatedly.
Yeah.
Good guy.
Well,
and
we
it's
do
his
have
script
some
that we may do, but it's like studio wars. So
right.
That's all I'll say about that.
We do have some questions from the audience, like from the chat room. So, one person wants to know, how are you cast in the Police Academy movie? Like,
how
original.
Was I cast?
Yeah. How did they pick you? Like,
oh, what a great question. I can't remember. It was so long ago. And it's all those cans of Coke. No, I'm kidding. I was an audition, just a regular audition, and it was at Warner Brothers, and I was nervous about it. And they at that time, we didn't have computers, so you couldn't get, you know, the sides, which is what we call the scene we have to perform, over the Internet. So I remember driving to Warner's and picking up the pages and then driving home in traffic and looking at them while I'm trying to drive. And it was this really tough character. And it's a scene. I did a scene that's not in the movie. Where I've got a writing crop and the recruits have just come and I'm looking at them and I'm saying, but really like intimidating type scene. And I had never done anything like that. I had just, in fact, done the very last show of Laverne and Shirley, not because I did 3 seasons on that. It was like maybe a month or two after that. And I sung at the Super Bowl, the national anthem, and then I didn't have any job. So I looked at this scene and I thought, now Rhonda and Laverne and Shirley and all the stuff that I'd done in the theater, nothing was quite like Callahan. And I sort of thought back to the opera and I said, she's sort of grand and bigger than life, but tough as nails. So I remember I hired a studio from an acting teacher of mine, and I took my ex-husband, who used to intimidate me, and we had a terrible marriage. And we had, you know, 9 years of a horrible marriage. And he's an actor. He'd been to RADA, and he's like 6'7". And he's mean. And I said, you know, would you come over here? I want to do this. And we worked that scene 2 afternoons for like 3 or 4 hours. One little scene. But at the last part of it, I actually scared him. I had, I think, you know, like a baton or something that I had for a writing crop. And I intimidated him. He started doing exactly what I was saying in the scene. And I thought, wow, okay. So I went in, I think it was the next morning, I went to Warner Brothers to do my reading, and Paul Maslansky, our producer, and Hugh Wilson were there. So we started in the scene, and I don't remember anything about it, because when you're really in the groove with acting, you're in the moment, and you don't really remember the details, because you're so involved. And at the end of the scene, I had them backed up against the wall. I mean, both of them, they'd been sitting in chairs. And I was standing in front of him, and I had this, you know, this thing in my hands, and I just was playing the scene. And they sort of said, okay, that's it. Thank you. Thank you very much. And I said, oh, gosh, guys, I'm, you know, typical me. I went, oh, gosh, guys, I'm so sorry. I pushed you up against the wall. And they're saying, no, that's fine, that's fine. And I went home, and I was screaming at myself. I was thinking, you moron, why did you have to get them so scared that they moved up against the wall? You know, there's a limit to what you're supposed to do with this kind of thing. And I waited, and about 2 weeks later, I just, you know, morbidly depressed because I hadn't heard anything. I got a call from my agent, and they said, now, it's between you and two other girls, but you seem to be in first place. And I said, you mean for the police academy thing? And yeah, and so I waited another 6 weeks to 2 months, and then I was cast.
Well, yeah. Now, can you mention who the other two were? Or?
I have no idea who they were.
Oh, okay.
You know, because I don't know. They didn't give me names, and I probably wouldn't have wanted to know because they would have, you know, the great things that have happened to me, I usually, you know, end up down to the wire with really nifty people. And I would have been depressed, I think, if I'd known who it was, who they were.
Wow. Okay, so another Police Academy question we have. What happened? Do you know what happened between Police Academy 4 and 5, and why did so few people come back, like no Bobcat and no Gutenberg?
Oh, was it between 4 and 5? You're absolutely right. Money.
Money?
Yeah. Yeah, we lost Sweet Chuck, too, didn't we?
Yeah, we did. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, what a terrific guy he is. Oh,
yeah.
He's funnier than ever, too. I got to tell you, I was in Amsterdam in Germany with him last year. And he made me laugh harder than I probably laughed in years. Oh, he's so great. And Bobcat is great. It was money. And Bobcat almost didn't do 4 because of money. And there were two other guys hired. The first guy kind of came to Toronto and then was fired. And then another guy came and all of a sudden Bobcat came, and that was holding out for a lot of money. And I think Paul just decided that, you know, he wanted to win a round.
Mm.
And I don't think Bobcat really wanted to come back, except he was so much fun. You know, it's kind of heartbreaking to all of us that he wasn't there on 5 and 6.
Well,
and I think we lost something. You know, Employees Academy was one of those things where you pick up people and it would be a gain. You know, it wasn't a tight-knit group. You could work your way into us pretty easily. We're, you know, pretty acquiescent. And we missed him very much. And we missed Tim Kazurinsky.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah. But the thing is, nobody holds it, you know, out as any kind of a schism or anything. I mean, I ran into Bobcat at a little cafe not too long ago, and it was just, you know, hugs for days. So, and then Timmy I went to Germany with, and it's a one, and they both, I think they're both written into whatever script this is that could eventually someday get made. At least I hope they are.
Now, I liked how I guess in the fifth one, when you know, of course there's no Steve Gutenberg anymore, but they have Matt McCoy pretty much take over.
Yeah.
And but I'm so glad that they didn't try to call him you know, Steve Gutenberg's name and everything, like the same character. He plays a different character. He's kind of similar, but a little bit different, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I thought that was handled nicely. You know, he's the uncle of Lassard, or the nephew of Lassard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it worked.
Yeah. And then you get introduced to him, you know, and I think that was the perfect for their assignment in Miami Beach. You know, I think it was the perfect thing for them to do.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that. We felt it was, too. We liked Matt a lot. You know, I say we, we're like the collective we. We're like a family. Oh, we liked him. He became a part of the family really fast.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So, well, now we've got a bunch of, like, Rob Zombie questions from the audience. A lot of them are horror fans out there, so.
Great.
So we're going to have
to. Hi, horror fans.
It's kind of amazing when I go to do the the conventions, and it's such a privilege to do them, is that the horror fans, you know, inevitably will bring up Police Academy 2. And I think, wow, you know, you wouldn't think of that as being
so bizarre.
A mixed genre.
Yeah.
But it is.
Okay, so one of the questions is definitely how did you feel during the Devil's Rejects? Like, how was that experience?
Well, pardon me, it's the smoky air. I've been doing this for 3 or 4 days. I felt great. I loved every second of working on Devil's Rejects. It was really hard. My first day was the interrogation scene in the jail and the death scene with William Forsythe.
Love that scene.
Thanks. I'm crazy about the scene. And I remember when I first got the sides for the scene, I said, oh my gosh, it's like going back to the opera. This is so grand. It's so interesting. The woman is so out there. You know, trying to sort of protect her daughter, because if she can keep the sheriff, you know, fascinated and interested long enough, it gives her daughter more time to get away. And I mean, just interesting kind of dimensions. But she's so out there and so wild and so crazy and so ready to just, you know, chop him to pieces. I just loved it. But it was a hard day. I mean, Rob shot with a number of cameras, and he wanted to do that whole interrogation scene all the way through every single time. And so the slap, you know, the stunt, and then the choking in the chair and all this stuff that went on was done over and over and over again. It was the entire scene. And I know one of the reasons that it worked, and I think maybe even one of the reasons that he did it, is that he wanted exhaustion to be a part of it. You know, there's seduction, yeah. There's violence. I thought I turned it. That's the other phone now. I swear my husband is trying to reach me, and he knows that I'm talking to you. But because he's running for office, he's forgetting everything. He wanted it to have a lot of elements of reality, you know. And I was chained. I remember my hands were numb for two weeks being in the handcuffs, and my ankles from being in the leg chains to the chair. Just all kinds of things. It was just wonderful. If you're going to do a scene like that, you have to be willing to suffer for it. And the suffering was glorious. And then the death scene that we did on the very same day was not in the script. I mean, basically, it was just the sheriff coming in and stabbing me. And I'm saying, where's my, can I say bad words on the
radio?
Yeah,
sure.
Oh, yeah.
It's a quote. Where's my fucking food? And then he comes in, bearing the food, and stabs me. And I fall in my food. And so we'd finished doing the interrogation scene all morning, and they pushed lunch, so I think it had been like 7 hours, and I'm sitting on the floor in chains eating this gruel, which was lunch. It felt like it on the floor, thinking, well, all I have to do now is die and I can go home. And Rob comes in and he says, well, you know, William and I, we thought it should be more of a scene, and we wrote this scene. And they had written this scene, and there were more lines to learn. And I remember thinking, I can't do this. I just can't do this. And then I read it, and I loved it. And I said, oh, wow, this is great. But it was completely, we did that scene completely unconsciously. And then William wouldn't say his lines. I'd say something, and he wouldn't say his lines. So I just sat there and scooted around and stuck my tongue out, and I had the best time. I mean, Rob is so, he doesn't miss a beat. You know, he'd talk to me between takes, and he was spot on with everything that he'd say. He's just great to work with. I mean,
yeah,
I can't tell enough about him. I can't. I am such a fan of Rob Zombie. And I haven't seen Halloween. Have you seen it yet?
The new one, or?
Yeah, the new one.
No, mm-hmm. I have not yet, unfortunately.
Yeah,
have
well,
you seen
I
it
just
then?
Haven't had a chance to go out and see it. So, I mean, that's on my agenda for the weekend.
Well, let me ask you, as everybody knows, you played the second Mother Firefly, the one who had played it originally, of course, in House of a Thousand Corpses, did not come back to do the second one, whereas where you picked up the part. I'm not saying this for any other reason that's true. You were my favorite Mother Firefly.
Oh, well, that's so nice. Yes, I'm so glad you said that, and it was required. You know, I'm sending you the check tomorrow.
I'm waiting for that one.
Yeah, but don't hold your breath. Oh, I the mail's slow getting out of L.A. because of the fires. It was bizarre. Oh. You know, I did so much theater and for so many years that the whole concept of an understudy and a standby, I mean, I was an understudy on Broadway and ended up playing a role a number of times, that I sort of feel to this day that I'm Karen Black's understudy. And that when she didn't carry on, that I got fabulous material. You know, I don't think it has anything to do with who played it. I just think that the films were so different,
mm-hmm.
and the material that the stuff that Rob wrote for Mother Firefly in Devil's Rejects was astounding. I mean, I haven't read anything. I haven't read since then. I haven't read anything like it.
Wow.
You know, so I don't. It's really hard to compare the two. I thought she was wonderful in House of a Thousand Corpses. I'm a huge fan. I didn't want to fill in for her, but I felt like an understudy going on. You know, save the day. Try to get, you know, just be there for everybody and make sure they have a body to work with.
I think the parts were so very different and so very distinctive. And, of course, you know, you still had to play the sexy kind of sextress, all of that. But I think you had more of an intense part, and I think with your acting skills, I think that the way you pulled it off made it very appropriate for this film. But did you ever get maybe a little nervous or thinking, you know, just, I mean, I know that you said you kind of felt like her understudy, but did you ever kind of have any thoughts of really falling behind in her footsteps?
It was intimidating. It was very intimidating. You know, if I hadn't been a fan, I probably wouldn't have thought about it. It would have been just the understudy kind of thing. But mm-hmm. I've been a fan of hers for so many years that it was intimidating. In fact, when the offer first came out, I did an audition for it, which he put the audition tape on the 30 Days from Hell. And I don't think that's ever been done before. And I got the part. I remember talking to my manager. I said, you know, there's only one thing that would make me turn this down, and it's because I found out that Karen Black originated this character, and I just don't feel right about it. And he sort of talked me down, and I did it. But I was always intimidated, and then I was afraid that the fans would be disappointed. You know, and you just don't want to let, because Rob has tons of fans, and House of a Thousand Corpses became such a cult hit. I just don't want to let him down.
Do you know why Karen decided to turn it down, or?
Well, you know, I'm assuming it's the same thing. You know, it's money. It's like it's Bobcat turning down Police Academy 5. I mean, I swear to God, I don't know if that's true. It's one of those things. I know that Sherry and Rob were really hurt by it. So I know that Rob wanted her to do it very, very much, and he wrote it for her.
From what I understand, she was actually filming, doing another project when that one. I think that was in the documentary. She was filming another film and was asked to come back and do this one and turn it down to do her own project.
Well, that's nice. Nobody ever told me that. And maybe I didn't see it in the documentary or I just blocked it out, you know. That's very nice. Because I know, you know, I remember Rob calling me to do a music video kind of thing, and I couldn't because my dad had just died, and I took care of both parents. I was in Arizona a lot for about 4 or 5 years, and I just happened to be able to do Devil's Rejects. I think it was just after my mom had a stroke, but she was okay for a little while. And I couldn't do the music video because my dad had just passed away, and he didn't know. But he was really, like, kind of irritated, you know, and so I was really surprised to be asked back for Halloween. So it was like I was busy and couldn't do it. But that may actually have been the case, but because I know that Rob and Sherry were very sorry that Karen didn't do the movie and very hurt. I don't know what the story is, but I've never heard anything from Karen's side of it.
Yeah.
Well, we do have a caller, so
you
they've
do?
Been waiting on for a while, but couldn't really find a place to bring them on. So let me bring them on. Excuse me, caller, you're on.
Hello?
Hello?
Hi. This is Kemper.
Hi.
Hi, okay, I just first of all want to say that I'm a huge fan of both Leslie and Day, and I think you both are amazing.
Wow, thank you. What about Jonathan?
Thank you. You're welcome. And I'm actually right now watching Devil's Rejects, so, like, I love your part in that movie. I just wanted to know if you know why they chose to go a different direction with how Mother Firefly acted in the movie.
You know, I don't have any idea. It was Rob's choice, and maybe he felt that it would work better as a springboard for the rest of the movie.
Okay. I think you were brilliant in it, and you're like one of my favorite characters on there, especially the interrogation scene when you went off. Like, yeah. So I have a favor. Could you like do that little part of the interrogation scene when you told him you were going to see him in fucking hell?
My husband's here now, and the doors are open. And you're like, I'll see you in fucking hell.
Yeah. That was like my favorite scene of the whole movie.
Oh my god, thank you.
Well,
I can't tell you how much fun I had doing it. It was like Grand Opera or something. It was just like somebody asked me what it felt like, and I said it felt like I've had a cork in me for years, and someone just pulled it out. You know, and I was able to just do anything I wanted, you know, like in a playroom, you know, with padded walls.
You did amazing in that movie. I loved it.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Yeah,
like
I remember saying to Rob afterwards, it was that day, and I was just, I mean, I was bruised and cut from the handcuffs. I was just a mess. And my neck has never been quite the same since on the left side. But I said to him, I said, I don't think I will ever, and I said, it's probably true, you can quote me on it, have as much fun doing something as I had doing this day's work.
Oh,
and
that's awesome.
And he just said, oh, go away. Get out of here. Rob does not suffer idiocy. He just wanted to see why. He has a very polite way of walking away from it, and I was behaving like an idiot.
That's awesome. And I also have another question. What was, like, out of everything you've ever done, what was your favorite thing, like movie, show, whatever, that you've ever done?
Wow, I don't know if I have a favorite. I think I would have to say Devil's Rejects.
Awesome.
Yeah, and the reason is because of Rob and because of the fans. I mean, just like this call, you know, it's just so nice. It's so nice to have that kind of affirmation about your work. You know, I've been acting for so long, but I do such kind of bizarre projects and nothing really in the mainstream, as I've said before, but, well, kind of Laverne and Shirley was sort of maybe too mainstream. But I've not had many parts which really made me stretch as an actor. And you get into the business because you want to stretch. You want to go beyond. I mean, I just read part of a script today that I think I'm going to do in October, which will take Mother Firefly to a new direction, I mean, take that kind of intensity and then add fanaticism, religious fanaticism, and abuse and all kinds of, and I've read part of it, and it's fascinating. But I think Devil's Reject, because I got to pull the cork out. You know, many times when you're acting, you're just trying to push that cork in further because the character is limited in many ways. But there was nothing limited about Mother Firefly, the way Rob wrote her. There were no limits.
Oh, you know. That's awesome.
Yeah, and it's a very interesting feeling to do. I mean, I don't want to suffer the pain of that day again, you know, the physical pain.
Yeah.
But as far as working, and then working with William Forsythe. You know, I've worked with lots of good actors, but not in great scenes.
Yeah, he is amazing.
When you have somebody working with you at the top of their game, oh my gosh, it's a class in itself. And working with him was just astounding. Just astounding.
Well, awesome. All right, well, thank you so much for letting me ask your questions. And I think you're beautiful and wonderful, and keep up the good work.
Where do you live? What area of the country?
I live in Las Vegas.
Do you really?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, that's fun.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, and you've been sort of hit by the economic meltdown, I think, a bit in Las Vegas.
Not me personally, but...
Good, because, I mean, it's funny. It's like, you know, we've been hit here, too, in California, and especially with our budget problems, but I feel fine.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, so, I mean, we have a lot to be grateful for.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
All right, well, thank you. Calling
Thanks
in.
Thanks so much for calling in.
Oh, thank you.
You have a good one.
Oh, you too. Bye.
Bye.
you have fans all over the place, you know.
Oh, Las Vegas, which is a great place to go. I worked there once for 6 months on a show and then never didn't open the show because I got another job and we didn't know if they'd ever fix the stage. It was when MGM Grand, it's now Bally's, but it used to be MGM Grand, and it was a musical review, and I rehearsed for 6 months and then left to do a tour of King and I with Ricardo Montalban and Brian Tochi, who ended up playing my boyfriend Nogata in Police Academy 4 and 5. So,
nice.
When you're around as long as I am, sometimes you go in circles. Listen, how are the two of you? Are you okay for time? I'm thinking I probably need to go soon.
Oh, okay. Well, we've definitely covered a lot of stuff. There's a couple
more questions
from the chat room,
called.
And then we'll just end it on there. But one person had to ask, what role would you like to be offered if you ever got like.
What role would I like to be offered?
That you might not normally get, you know.
I don't know. That's a really good question because I was trying to think of what, like, great roles in the theater, you know. I'm at an age where I could play a lot of great roles for the theater, and I won't be at this age very long. You know, I'll be past it. And what would I like to do? And it's really hard to put my finger on it. You know, I mean, I always would like to do something that I've never done. I mean, I think it would be great fun to play, you know, a very tough, smart matriarch of a large family.
Yeah.
You know, not necessarily evil, but, you know, but just a tough, smart, you know, sort of character that is involved with a large family because I didn't have one. So that would, you know, I was an only child and a daughter. So it would be great to do that. Trying to think if there's, yeah, I don't know. That's great. It means that whatever happens will be a surprise.
Yeah, nice.
I just love to work. I mean, I would always like to work on challenging things and to kind of go to new places. I guess it's why this project that came up today, I guess my agents have been talking to the producer for quite a while, but that I didn't really know much about it today. There's an element to that with the religious fanaticism and an abusive personality where, you know, you can take any good thing too far and if the mind will play tricks on you. And so that's an area where I haven't gone. And it's like Mother Firefly with a twist.
Yeah.
And so I would like to go there. But I'd also like to play really good, a good character. You
yeah.
know, someone that stands up for something. Someone with a heart, someone that cares, someone that can make a difference. Because sometimes as people we feel are not making a difference, you know. We try to support causes we believe in, and we try to, you know, I was going to go to a candlelight vigil tonight, and I'm obviously not there. But, you know, I guess I like roles that are sort of heroic. And then I also think of the role, you know, of, I can't think of her name, in Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf. That really emasculating, drunken character. And that's interesting. I always wanted to play Blanche in Streetcar Named Desire because she's crazy. But she's soft crazy. You know, and I have that side. We just explore different things. So I don't know.
Now, has there been another question that they ask is, has there ever been like a role that you regret turning down?
Trying to think if I've ever turned down a role. yeah, I mean, I know that there are things where I've been busy and couldn't do something that came up, but I can't remember what it was. No, I've had to turn down roles, but I was usually, you know, much happier doing what I was doing.
Yeah.
No, I'd like to be in a position where I had to turn them down. Wouldn't that be great? Can you imagine? I mean, Jonathan, is it okay to talk about misfortune?
Sure, I guess.
I mean, do people know about it, or is it something that you...
Not many people know about it. Like, don't even know if Day knows really anything about it, but it's just a project I'm trying to one day get off the ground. It's a bigger scaled project than you know, a lot of the other stuff I've been doing. But
well, you know, I watched a short film.
Blackout?
Yeah, I liked it.
Oh wow, thank you.
I liked it. And I liked it. I will tell your audience, and I'll tell Day. I read a script of Jonathan's, and it really scared me, and it gets you on a really kind of personal, in a personal way. I mean, it has to do with sort of fate through reading a fortune. Like a lot of people, you know, read horoscopes or whatnot, and there's always that fear. Well, like even when you're looking at your horoscope, that it might be something really awful, and somehow that will curse the day. It doesn't happen. But it's really fascinating, Jonathan.
Oh, thank you.
I wish you luck with it.
I know, and I'm hoping that we can get you involved with it.
Yeah, me too.
That'd be great to work with you. But
yeah, it would really be interesting.
Yeah, definitely.
And the character.
That character is very much, you know, like something like I think that you'd be perfect for. So, you know,
yeah.
I wasn't, no offense, but I wasn't writing with you in mind, but when I... After, because I try not to write with people in mind in case, you know, I can't get people or whatever.
Right,
you know?
Exactly, and then you're going to have trouble seeing another actor do it.
Right.
Yeah.
But after I read it and then once I found out that, you know, maybe I could email you about it, I looked at it and I was like, wow, this would be the perfect role for Leslie, you know?
Yeah.
And, I was very happy that you liked it. I mean, you could have been, like, just lying to me. I don't know.
You'll never know.
You know, you never will, but...
No, I don't think I'd do that to you. You know,
yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't be brutal, but I definitely would say it's just something I'm not interested to do it. Thank you very much. I mean, you know, you've written something really interesting.
Thank you.
Really interesting.
Yeah.
And she's a woman with very little heart.
Yeah, exactly. And,
you know, but that's another challenge.
Yeah, so it's Mother Firefly all over again, you know, in a way. But you know, it's a great character. It'd be fun.
It's not as brutal, but she's as damaging to her daughter.
You know, I was actually talking to a friend of yours about it, Bobby Ray Akers, a little bit.
Oh, is he the best?
He's great. He's a great guy, and
he really is.
He's been happy that I talked to you about it, you know, and everything because.
Oh, good.
When he heard that I asked you about it, I'm sure his eyes lit up, but you know he was just happy when he was talking to me over, you know, online about it. You know, like
well, that's
just,
nice. That's nice. Bobby is a sweet, sweet guy, and also very on the ball.
Yeah.
I mean, you and Bobby. I mean, there are awfully good young people out there creating. You know, and I swear Bobby's going to get a film produced.
Yeah,
he really
you've
is.
Got one
so
in the works that you're attached to, Hollis Point.
I know. It'd be funny if I got to work with both of you, like in a year or something, you know.
Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, I've met Bobby. I haven't met you. So that we have to fix that.
We'll fix that at one of the conventions, I'm sure, or something.
Yeah,
you
well,
know.
Give my love to Bobby, please.
Yeah,
if you email him before I do.
But, yeah, I wanted to plug that in, too, because I hope I would. You know.
Yeah, I hope he gets Hollow Point made. It's very interesting and very different from what you've done, but it's horror genre.
Yeah, it's definitely the same spirit, but it's different.
Yeah,
I'm sure it's a different project, you know, altogether.
Yeah, and what Bobby doesn't know is I have these ideas on my character and the character who's playing my husband, and he's just going to go, what? So we won't tell him what it is, not for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but I have an idea who's going to play your husband if I can. For
oh, can you say on the show?
I mean, well, I can say who I want, who I'd prefer. You might laugh though. Kane Hodder, just because it would be
he is
really
so cruel.
Yeah, it'd be really kind of creepy too.
He's
you know?
Not creepy at all. He's really dear, but oh boy, I'll tell you, he was our stunt coordinator on Devil's Rejects.
Right.
He's tough. He's tough. He's really good. I think it's a great idea. I would love to do, like, you know, a relationship scene or two with Kane.
Yeah. I mean, The thing,
well, now
the problem
he's taking
with
a bath.
He's
going to do the stunt stuff too, right?
Yeah, he'd be doing the stunts. That'd be probably part of the package. But
well, you know who I was going to approach to play my husband, and Bobby said, "What a good idea!" But I mean, I'm not going to do anything until, you know, Bobby gives me the go ahead. But I was, you know, now this is out of the box too, because I told me not supposed to say it. It was Joe Penny.
Hmm.
Do you know who he is? Jake and the Fat Man.
Who is that?
Did you ever see Jake and the Fat Man?
No.
Oh, it was a TV show. It was a big hit. Jonathan.
Have you, Dave?
Dave, do you know who he is?
I don't know who he is, and I
haven't. Oh, you guys have to Google him. Oh, IMDb him when you go home.
Oh. See, I probably know who he is. I'd have to see the face.
He's a big name. I mean, he's a big sort of mainstream name, and he's just a dishy, delicious, wonderful guy. I know him through sports and, you know, hobbies that I have. But Kane is so bankable in the genre.
Yes.
Oh, that's so funny, because what I want to do with the two characters is add a lot of kissing. That would be funny. I'm going to have to call up Kane and tell him.
Hey, tell him. I'll send him an email. I think I've got his email address, but love to see what he says about the script, if he liked it. You know,
Kane.
Yeah, Kane.
Yeah. I hope he does.
Yeah, because I mean he'd be perfect for the role. That's what I was thinking, because he'd be doing the stunts, but also he kind of gives this guy a kind of like scary dad feel to the character. So, you know,
yeah, just something a little off center.
So that's,
you know, the whole
place
has to seem off center, and I think that Kane is a great idea. Good thinking, Jonathan.
Yeah, and that'd be interesting to have you add some kissing scenes in there too.
Well, I don't want to add any scenes, but you know, I just thought, what could these characters do that would really sort of be a little odd, you know, and just wildly mad for each other at our age? It's funny, kind of, you know, and dear. And it would be wildly unexpected.
Mm.
So I don't know. We'll see how it all turns out. But
well, I guess you know, since you've got a role pretty much, and your husband's probably like going crazy right now.
Well, he's home and he's probably hungry, and he's been campaigning so hard, and he had a series of meetings today, and so I promised him I would be done around 8 o'clock. I thought we might, you know, because I knew we were starting at, well, my time, not your time.
Right.
I knew I was starting California time. No, L.A. time at 8 or at 7. I figured that you'd be sick of me by now. So
apparently
no,
we haven't been. No,
yeah,
no.
See, that was a leading question. You had to say something nice after I said that, right?
Of course not. Yeah, of course not. You know, we would.
I've really enjoyed this so much. Thank you for having me on with both of you.
Well, thank you for coming on, and best of luck to your husband on his campaign. I hope he wins.
Oh, thank you very much.
Yeah,
I'm telling you,
you,
all the good thoughts in the world do make a difference.
Exactly.
Lots of good thoughts. And I hope to meet you both. And
absolutely.
if we do Jonathan's movie date, hopefully you'll be involved, or you'll be there, or, you know, whatever.
I'll crash the set and start ruffling some feathers.
Would you promise?
I that.
I've enjoyed it very much, you guys.
Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for having me.
No problem. It's my pleasure.
I felt so pampered. You have such interest in me, you see. You know, you run around and nobody cares. And all of a sudden you get on a show like this, and it's like, oh, somebody cares. They care. It's very nice. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much.
I'm gonna
have to go watch Devil's Rejects again.
Yes, you do. It's required. Required watching.
Required
watch.
Well, the best of
goodbye,
luck.
Goodbye, guys.
What
day?
Best luck to you and your husband. I hope everything works out for the best. I'm so happy that your house is great, and I hope you have a great week.
Okay, thank you. And I hope you have a great week, too. And I will have Jonathan email you or give me your email, and I will tell Jonathan how the election turns out.
Absolutely.
All
okay.
Right. Well, thank you.
Bye, guys.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye. Well, Dave, what did you think of that show?
I just love her.
She's fantastic.
She's one of my favorites. She's really one of the actresses, especially in the genre, but in the business period, that I think is just a complete light. And she's fun. She's just so much fun. And everything I've ever seen her, any interview, anything, she's just so much fun.
Yeah, and that's what, you know, that's what I was excited about, because, like, from her emails, too, she seemed like she was, you know, like that. So, you know, I'm really happy. And next week, I'm having Jim O'Rear on, so that's going to be a lot of fun, too. He's been getting a lot of people hyped up for it. So even Carolyn Williams, you know, wished him a good luck on the show. I'm like, crap, you know. So that's really cool, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so. Well, what is everybody in the chat room thinking? What's going on in there?
Let's check it out. Man, I've been so, like, swamped with this thing, so I'm trying to turn down the chat stuff, and then everybody's getting kind of mad, you know, because I'm kind of trying to concentrate on stuff. But some people, yeah, everybody's been saying great show, so.
Nice.
It seems like it, so, yep, it's doing good. I can't wait to hear what... I hear what people think later, you know, and I can't believe she brought up my movie. That's kind of weird.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't see that's awesome. That, you know.
That gives me press, I guess. You know, on my own show. It's kind of. Oh, it's crazy, but yeah, it's a great interview. It's pretty much the consensus from the chat people, which is great because even with my cold, I still did a show. You know.
That's
which means
important.
If I was getting paid for this, I'd be having a cold and working, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Trust me, I know I did a show with my two kidneys failing, and I was doped up. That was I was quite the conversationalist.
Wow.
So I can give you props.
I can imagine that show going off really well.
Oh, it was interesting, to say the least. I don't really remember it.
Oh, I'm pretty sure that's part of you being doped up. But thank you, Day, for coming on. And it wasn't short notice. I mean, I gave you pretty good notice about doing your show, you know, and everything. So,
thank you for having me, and to all the listeners. Thank you guys for joining us. And go to horrornews.net. We have not
definitely check that out. And I'll you know, I'll send Leslie your email address so you can communicate with her, and maybe you can do an interview with her or something if she's you know, if it's up to her. But if she's up to her, which I'm sure she will be, since she had a great time, you know.
Absolutely. You know. Well, thank you so much for having me. You did very well. Besides, you know, not besides, but you know, in spite of your cold, you did a great job. And to the people listening, you guys, awesome questions. So proud of you guys. You guys are awesome, too. And to the girl who called in, you know, thank you for making her do the mother firefly thing. That was awesome.
That was awesome.
Absolutely. Well, you guys have a great week. I am out of here. I've got some articles to write. But just for everybody once again listening, go to horrornews.net. Check out What's the Bloody Deal with Day? And all of the great other things that we have. And I might just steal this episode and put it on our news, if that's okay with you.
Totally okay. Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay, because my phone's messing up a little bit. So.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, and I will talk to you soon.
Okay, well, I will talk to you later.
Bye.
Okay, bye. Well, thank you guys for listening, and I hope you enjoyed the show, and check back next week for Jim O'Rear, and check back for other stuff, too. So, coming up, we've got some really awesome shows planned, getting scheduled, 10 Sundays Productions, the group who do stuff out in Northern Virginia that I'm friends with, they're coming on the show next week, too, so, or not next week, next week, next Thursday, exactly, so. Check out for that too, and there's more stuff coming on I can't say yet, but there will be some really cool guests, so just keep checking back, and hope you guys enjoyed it. Bye.